celebrating 10 years of great radio, over 500 episodes, and over 500 hours of radio content. Thank you.
Wow, those are some great questions.
I did my homework on you, obviously, and watched some previous...
Yeah, you sound like you did.
Great. Now, Bruce, that was such a good interview. I've done so many of these now, that was easily one of the best.
Great interview, Bruce. Thank you so much.
This was an awesome interview. Thank you so much.
You know, the ability, I've discovered in all the shows that I do and stuff, the ability to pack a lot of information in as an organization and, you know, making up questions and stuff in advance.
Yeah.
And you're one of the few people who's ever done that. I wish more radio people would do it. A lot of them just wing it.
You actually read the book.
Thanks, Bruce. I really appreciate it. Yes, really great questions. I really appreciate that.
Bruce, it's been a pleasure. I really enjoyed this talking with you.
That's a good question, and actually, I'm really glad you bring that up.
You know, I don't know. That's a good question.
Listen, Bruce, you know, a lot of very probing and thoughtful questions from you. I don't expect that I'm going to be asked some of these questions, but very, very intense stuff, and, you know, you garnered some very intense answers.
The Baron of Broadcasting. The new theater of the mind. The Bruce Collins Show.
Welcome back to the Bruce Collins Show. We're very glad to have you join us. Tonight, the doctor is in the house. And I don't mean Dr. Miles. Dr. Elena George joins us to talk about the Affordable Care Act and solutions to the current system. Also joining us is Red Smedley, a bartender who claims to have seen reptilians at his bar. The Bruce Collins Show airs every Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WWPR, 1490 a.m. You can also catch the show on Fridays at 10 p.m. Eastern Time online at ipbn-fm.com. That's ipbn-fm.com. Please tell your friends about The Bruce Collins Show, and you can join us on Facebook at The Bruce Collins Show page. If you'd like to contact us, you can email us at bruce_collins_show@aol.com. We also have a new website, thebrucecollinsshow.com. Again, that's thebrucecollinsshow.com. The Bruce Collins Show also has a YouTube channel. Visit YouTube, search for The Bruce Collins Show channel, subscribe, and catch all the latest shows on YouTube. And now let me introduce my co-host, Chad Miles. Chad is a former congressional candidate in Michigan and a military veteran, and is the founder and webmaster at Conspiria.net and ZippyCheese.com. You can also find out more information about Chad at ChadMiles.com. He's radio's lethal weapon, Chad Miles. Hey, welcome back to the program, Chad.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. But that is your real name, isn't it?
I'll never tell.
Fair enough.
You know, in all seriousness, Chad, I have been promised that Social Media Jones, will definitely have a commercial ready next week to air nationwide.
What took him so long?
He had complications.
What does that mean?
Well, let's bring him on and ask him. Social Media Jones, are you there?
Social Media Jones.
There he goes again.
Yeah, if only he would go.
Don't disrespect me, dude. I am a professional.
That's right.
Oh, yeah? Well, what have you done professionally?
I worked for Chips Ahoy.
Oh, so you ate their food?
Nah, I was in the IT department.
Huh. What did you do in the IT department, Social Media?
I enabled cookies.
Yeah, I bet you did. Chocolate chips.
That wasn't very nice, Chad.
The truth hurts, Bruce.
So social media, the commercial's ready now and will air all over the U.S. next week, right?
That's right, dude. It is ready to go.
Well, what took you so long?
Well, unfortunately, in putting the commercial together, Art and Sass were separated.
What does that mean?
It's a metaphor.
I don't know. What is a metaphor?
Focus, Bruce. Come on, focus.
I try, but it gives me a headache.
This commercial will be huge. Trust me, dude.
Oh, I'd bet on it.
How can you bet on it when Social Media Jones has all your money?
Food stamps?
Okay, guys. I have to go for now, but trust me, next week is going to be big news for the Bruce Collins Show.
Well, that's great, Social Media Jones. Social Media Jones.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it.
You know what you are, Chad?
What's that?
You're antisocial. Get it?
Well, in the case of you two, I'd agree.
Wow, I'm actually right. Chad, do you have any news for us this week?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do. A team of researchers is following about 30 tabbies, calicos, and others, recording their moves and sounds to somehow learn whether house cats have dialects in their meows and alter other patterns of stress and intonation when they speak to other cats or to humans. In explaining the project, linguist Robert Eklund of Sweden's Linköping University personally sounded out a pretty wide range of meows to illustrate his points, wrote a New York Magazine interviewer in April. Eklund is already an expert on feline purring, and you can look at that at purring.org, although from a distance, because as he admits to being allergic to cats. That's from New York Magazine.
You know, that reminds me of a story I was once told by a very, very old man. Franz Grubner was known the world over as an adventurer and treasure hunter. He was featured in the Darby and Davis comedy team's popular movie, Jungle Jim, playing himself. He often lectured at meetings around the globe with the elites of society over his many treks into the most remote regions of the globe. Grubner had explored distant lands and uncharted regions as an occupation, which gave him a unique form of celebrity. In an age before action figures, children wanted to be Franz just by the stories they collected from their parents. Grubner was a lanky 6 feet tall specimen with sun-dried skin that resembled a tan raisin. He loved to wear a pith helmet in public to remind people visually who he was, and he was always happy to sign autographs. He basked in the recognition. In short, his ego always got the best of him, and he gravitated to the stroking of it. Franz had unearthed some valuable archaeological pieces through the years, although he preferred not to be called an archaeologist. In fact, many of the archaeology digs were in the company of lesser-known archaeology academics and experts. Nonetheless, Franz had a skill with marketing his larger-than-life character. All of his wealth had been amassed through his connections with Hollywood, more so than his exploring side. Nonetheless, his reputation was still forged by the legends and myths of his grand adventures into the dark, dense, uninhabited lands. William Randolph Hearst saw an opportunity to sell newspapers and invited him to his San Simeon estate, which was still being built. As Hearst entertained Grubner, he promised him the rewards of being featured by all 28 of his newspapers, the famous Hearst newspapers. The ego of Franz Grubner had been well stroked. Hearst was known as being loose with the news, and the actual article that appeared a week later was more of an editorial exposing Franz Grubner as a fraud who was afraid to embark on the same types of expeditions that David Livingston had already achieved in the prior century. Grubner was livid. It was tantamount to calling him a coward, and at the same time, it issued a challenge. Grubner was going to have to travel to regions of Africa, and the prize was high. Pirate treasure from a Spanish galleon that was rumored to be located there.
Bruce. Bruce. Hey, Bruce.
What? What, Chad?
Hey, are you okay?
I'm fine.
Well, that was a weird story. Hey, do we have time to do the rest of the news?
No, we do not, Mr. Hearst. Up next, Dr. Elena George talks about what is wrong with Obamacare and gives solutions. And Red Smedley claims to have seen reptilians at his bar. An action-packed hour in a moment. Dr. Elena George is a board-certified otolaryngologist. She graduated from Princeton University with a degree in biology. She received her master's degree in medical microbiology from Long Island University and received her medical degree from Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. Dr. George completed her residency at Manhattan Eye, Ear, and Throat Hospital. Her training included general surgery at Lenox Hill Hospital, pediatric ENT at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, and head and neck oncology at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. She has published in several scientific journals and presented her research at national meetings. As a solo practitioner in private practice who is also a small business owner, she has a unique perspective on the problems of healthcare delivery, the true costs of healthcare, and viable solutions. Dr. George is a recipient of the Patient's Choice Award in 2008 and 2009. She was recently honored with membership in the Leading Physicians of the World and Who's Who Top Doctors Honors Edition. Her book is Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control and How Doctors and Patients Working Together Can Rebuild a Better System. Dr. George, welcome to the Bruce Collins Show.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you on. Now, before we talk about your book, Big Medicine, how did you decide that the medical profession was the career for you?
That's a good question. It's, as a child, it was all I ever wanted to do, from the time I was in kindergarten, actually. And it was something that came very easily to me, and I'm blessed to be able to actually be able to do what I love to do, what I was, in my opinion, put on this earth to do. So I don't know of anything I could manage to do, to tell you the truth.
Huh. So what inspired you to write this book, Big Medicine?
You know, I do love what I do. And being a doctor, it's a calling, just as much as it's a profession. Mm-hmm. And over the past 15 years in practice, there's been an absolute assault on the doctor-patient relationship. And doctors have been demonized. We've been put in a position where we're working against our patients. And instead of wanting to complain about it or quit the profession, I wanted to educate patients and doctors about how we got into this position and how we can work our way out of it together.
Now, before the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, you point out in your book, Big Medicine, that the healthcare system has been deteriorating, and I think most people would agree with that, and it has mm-hmm. not been by accident. Can you explain?
You have to understand the bigger picture here. The healthcare system in our country was an outlier. The developed countries, such as UK, Canada, New Zealand, et cetera, have all joined the socialized medicine system, and we are the last holdout. And people have heard of the new coding system, ICD-10. That's actually our entree into that system. It's brought by the World Health Organization and the UN, and it's a way of monetizing, quantifying, and centralizing our healthcare system.
So in essence, this is another grab by global elitism, isn't it?
You can put it that way. I think, you know, we only have a few things that we need to control. One is our bodies. And yeah. in this system, that is being stripped away. You become fodder for population-based medicine, where it's no longer individualized. You belong to a group, and you are to be controlled as such.
Hmm. That's scary. Now, can you tell us, as a small business owner yourself, and again, we're speaking with Dr. Elena George. She's the author of Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control, and how doctors and patients working together can rebuild a better system. I recommend this book. I think it's very important. But you yourself, Dr. George, are a small business owner. How impactful is Obamacare on small businesses?
It's putting doctors out of business. We used to be 55% of the healthcare delivery system, private practitioners, independent doctors. We're now down to about 30%, and that number is dwindling as we speak. There's been a movement, as I talked about, centralization of the healthcare system, but also the money, what's considered to be usual and customary, is now being controlled by the government and the insurance companies. It actually has nothing to do with the value of the medical care delivered. It's arbitrary. And the independent doctors are on the outside looking in. So when they talk to you about, or anybody, about the cost of health care as if it's the doctor's fault, the doctors only account for about 7 cents of the health care dollars spent. It is not the doctors that's costing everybody money. It's the insurance companies, it's the hospital administrations, it's the pharmaceutical industry. That's where the health care dollar is being spent. And there's no control over that.
What is the impact of the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare on the average citizen?
It's rationing of care. I know that people, you know, a lot of it's made of that statement made initially, but that's actually what's come to pass. And it's not just the government rationing. It is self-rationing because it costs so much money out of pocket. Patients are denying themselves access to doctors. They can't afford the medications that are prescribed. They can't afford to have tests done because the deductibles and coinsurance has gone through the roof. When I opened my practice in 2001, when an insured patient came to see me, most of the time they didn't have any money out of pocket. They just paid their premium, and they would come in and get their services. Now people are walking into my office, and some of them have an out-of-pocket deductible of $10,000. That means they have to pay the premium. They have to pay up to $10,000 before the insurance kicks in the first dime. And that's the standard under Obamacare, or since the Affordable Care Act has passed. $2,500, $5,000. These are all money that people are scraping to get, and they're denying health care, their own health care, because of it.
Sobering. Now, in Chapter 7 of your book, Big Medicine, again by Dr. Elena George, you write, "The Affordable Care Act may appear to stand alone, but it most certainly does not. It is part of a much larger pattern contributing to the power and influence of the federal government on individual lives." And we've touched on that, but maybe expand. What does this larger picture look like, and where is this ultimately leading us?
Ultimately, I believe it's leading to a loss of privacy. Even though we're told about the, you know, the HIPAA law and how it's supposed to protect patients from privacy, in actuality, what it does is it opens up your intimate relationship between you and your physician to whatever vendor, whatever government agency wants to look at it. So there's something called meaningful use, and the electronic medical record system, for example, is a great example of how your personal information is no longer yours. Doctors are now, and hospitals, are in a position where they have to document everything electronically. We've seen hackers hack the insurance industry. Well, your personal information is just as vulnerable, technically. Mm-hmm. But let's say that doesn't happen. Everything that a doctor writes, every order, every prescription, is on a cloud, and it gets accessed by the health and HHS, by the FBI, by the IRS, because it all has to be documented that you actually won who you say you are. If you're getting a subsidy, you have to have it in a legal way, otherwise they can come after you. If you do owe money, if you do get a subsidy and the next year you make more money because you had a raise, for example, you have to pay that back. So subsidies aren't in a vacuum. They're not given to you. They're basically a loan, and you have to pay it back if you do better. So personal information about your income, your data, your banking information, your social security number, where you live, your cell phone number, all that information went into the database when people access the web for Affordable Care Act, and that information is out there that the government actually has. That's one section of it. The other is something called meaningful use, and that's more of a social tool to get information about what's going on in your home, whether or not you have guns in your home, if you ever tried to hurt yourself, how many people live in your home. These are actually questions that doctors are asking patients in order to close their chart. Now, that's information that as an ear, nose, and throat doctor, I don't need to know if you've ever hurt yourself, if you have a gun in your home. I don't need that if I was a psychiatrist, perhaps. But this information is being asked by pediatricians, by ear, nose, and throat. Every physician who has an electronic medical record and takes Medicare, for example, has to answer these questions, or they may not be paid, or they may actually be considered an outlier. And they might get their license pulled. Depends on how you choose to answer these questions or not. So there's one size fits all. If you follow the mandates of a central organization, if you don't answer these questions, if you don't ask them, then you're a problem. Hmm. So there's really been a chilling effect on the doctor-patient relationship. If patients decide they don't want to answer these questions, but you need to know them for a medical purpose, it just makes a real barrier, and that's not what the doctor-patient relationship is based on. It's based on honesty.
Hmm. Wow, that is really chilling, as you said. Now, I want to stop and take a second to remind the listeners that there's a lot of great information here in this interview, and we're going to dig a little bit deeper, but we obviously can't get through the whole book. That's why you need a copy of this book. And like I said, I've been through this book. I recommend it. I think it's very important that people educate themselves on this. The book is Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control, and How Doctors and Patients Working Together Can Rebuild a Better System, again, by Elena George, Dr. Elena George. And we're going to find out where we can find her online at the end of this interview. Now, Dr. George, what insight can we gather from President Obama's appointment of Donald Berwick to head up the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in 2010?
Well, one thing that you need to know about him is that he's a staunch supporter of the British socialized medical system, and he wanted that to be the template for our system under the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, most people have this very vague idea of socialized medicine and single payer as if it's the greatest thing ever. It actually is a system entrenched in rationing, because it's all about the good of the many outweighing the needs of the few, having finite resources, and a central committee deciding how those resources are allocated. I mean, the fact that he was so cavalier, if you go online, Google him, and read some of the statements he's made, it's very paternalistic, where a central committee gets to decide what gets covered. For example, Medicare stopped covering a medicine called Avastin, which is a medication that was used for uterine cancer. But because it was expensive and it was felt not to help very many people, it was denied coverage under Medicare. That's the kind of thing that goes on in this system. It may be that you're that one person that it's going to work for, but because it's so expensive and you're deemed, or your illness is deemed not to be cost effective, it's not going to be covered. Hmm. Everybody's a cost center in this system. You're not an individual. You're a disease. You are a cost to the system. And if you're too far out in the expensive part of it, they're just going to make you comfortable. And we're talking hospice. We're talking palliative care, which is a huge part of the Affordable Care Act. Again, unless you're a senior or you have a devastating illness, you don't see this. But on in real time, what's going on, people are being managed in a way that if you are young and healthy, you are given most of the medical resources. When you reach 50 plus, under the complete live system, is where this all came from, who is was created by Rahm Emanuel's brother, Ezekiel Emanuel, a bioethicist who was in on creating the Affordable Care Act. You get to understand their mindset. Once you reach a certain age and you're a senior, then resources should not be spent on you. You should be made comfortable. You've lived a good life, and now you're costing somebody else health care. I take offense to that. We're all going to be seniors at some point, and ultimately it's about you turn to society how it treats its seniors and how it treats its children. And if seniors are deemed to be over the hill and should be put out to pasture, it says something about our society, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, this the more I'm talking to you, this sounds more like some restrictive government rather than a free society. It's really sobering. Now,
unfortunately, it is. I agree with you on that.
Now you mentioned earlier, almost I'm paraphrasing, but it was almost like the doctors were acting as spies, finding things out about you and then reporting back to you. And your book even goes further. It says that if doctors choose to put patient care first, they can look forward to fines or jail time. Is that right?
That's true. If you're a Medicare doctor, provider doctor, if you underbill somebody, that means you don't charge them what you're allowed to charge because you have empathy. You know, the patient can't afford it. That's considered fraud. Just as much as it is if you overcharge them. What kind of sense does that make, really?
Right.
So if you underbill somebody, you do it three times. The first time you do it, it's a $25,000 fine. The second time, $75,000. The third time, jail. So knowing that there's no way that I can win this as a physician, you understand now why lots of doctors who don't no longer take Medicare, because the process of looking over your shoulder, by being considered guilty until proven innocent, if you make one mistake on a chart, there's no reason to take that insurance anymore because you'll be out of business. Or if you're really unlucky, you'll lose your practice and you'll be put in jail. And that has happened to physicians a lot over the course of this law that was passed while Eric Holder was still the Attorney General. So it's not very, it hasn't been around forever, but It had a chilling effect. It was one of the reasons that I stopped taking Medicare, because I just wanted to take care of my patients. I didn't want to be an agent for the government. I didn't want to look over my shoulder, and I didn't want to lose my practice.
You know, I picked up on something, and I believe you're a real patriot, and you love this country, and you love your practice, you love your work, and you're trying to make the world a better place. And this show, oftentimes we have people of faith on this program, and I get the sense that that is part of your life, and that is why this mission is so important to you, isn't it?
No doubt about it. I love God. I love what I do. I'm here to be an advocate for my patient, as 99% of physicians who went into the profession are. And we are under duress. We're under attack. 400 doctors a year commit suicide since the Affordable Care Act passed. Nobody talks about that statistic. The fact that you're put at odds with your mission to practice the Hippocratic Oath. I'm to do no harm. I'm to be an advocate for my patient. I cannot perform abortion. I cannot perform euthanasia. I took an oath not to do that.
Yeah.
And nobody, no government, nobody is going to make me work against my oath to myself, to my profession, and to God. So that juxtaposition, that duality is what's making doctors miserable. and what's causing us to take ourselves off the playing field in record numbers.
And we're speaking this week to Dr. Elena George. She is the author of Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control, and How Doctors and Patients Working Together Can Rebuild a Better System. Get a copy of this book. Now, you have a chapter called Six Ways Your Health Insurance Company Makes It Hard for Your Doctor to Take Care of You. Can you touch on this?
Well, you have to understand the power that the insurance companies have. They didn't start off with this power. They started off as, actually, the first one, Blue Cross Blue Shield, was created by physicians. It was nonprofit. Over the last 20 or 30 years, it's changed into a huge business that's all designed to make money and make money on the backs of doctors and patients. And they have the largesse and the power of the government behind them. Because if you follow the money, you'll understand why that is. They give huge amounts of money to Congress, and they get, you know, favors passed to help them. And they have more money, more power, and ultimately they're controlling this show. And that's what people need to know. So don't do anything to make it easy on themselves and hard on you and me as a physician. For example, pre-certification, that is a random, arbitrary process where they get to decide what gets covered. It has nothing to do with the doctor's national organization. I belong to the American Association of Otolaryngology and Head and Neck Surgery. I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor. They set up guidelines with what is medically necessary, what constitutes good medical care for our specialty. The insurance companies get to ignore that. And I can tell you that I've been on the phone with pediatricians and psychiatrists who are denying my services because it doesn't fit the guidelines of the insurance company. They're not ear, nose, and throat doctors. They have no idea what they're denying, but they have the power to do that. And nobody can come after them. You know, we're still waiting for a payment after a year of fighting for a procedure that was done that was appropriate, medically necessary, and they arbitrarily get to say no. And then the government is backing them up 100%. So that's one problem that makes it hard for us to take care of our patients. The next thing, obviously, is cost. They are actually under the Affordable Care Act. And take a step back and listen to what I'm going to say because it's really important. Under the Affordable Care Act, they doubled down on the most expensive aspects of healthcare. They empowered the hospitals, the pharmaceutical industry, the medical insurance industry. They're the ones who were sitting around that table and created the Affordable Care Act. And in that process, we've seen a drop in doctors in independent practice who are the most cost-effective parts of the healthcare system. They're gone. They've created, we call extenders or allied health professionals, nurse practitioners, physician assistants. There's now something called a healthcare advocate or a community healthcare advocate under the Affordable Care Act. There's 46,000 of those people who will go into a patient's home and get personal information from them under the guise of helping them navigate the system. Well, that costs everybody. So there's all these layers now of healthcare delivery, layers between you and your doctor that don't really help, but basically gather information and gatekeep. And the last piece of that come online is the so-called DocSix. That's had something called accountable care organizations that were created. Those are hospital-based segments of the hospital, meaning the radiology, any doctor, any lab, anything that the hospital owns is part of this system. And they get a certain amount of money per year by the government. It's called capitation in the old days. And they have to deliver that care based on the monies given. So they now have a pressure to deny care, to keep you out of the hospital, to treat you by telemedicine, whatever, you know, remote way they can to make a profit at the end of the year. If you have a catastrophic illness, you're not really coming into the hospital for any length of time anymore. They're going to put you in hospice because it's more cost effective. So the pressure is money being centralized, power being centralized, and individual care being you know, gotten rid of or demonized.
Yeah.
That's not healthcare.
No, absolutely not. Well, this is very eye-opening. Again, the book is Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control and How Doctors and Patients Working Together Can Rebuild a Better System by Dr. Elena George. I think everyone needs a copy of this book. Now, one thing that I like about your book is it's very overwhelming to look at something like this, but I always like a book that also has solutions. And your book talks about solutions to reform the current system. Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to tell you about that. This, everything I talk about is what they want you to believe. You don't have options. You don't have choice. But you actually do. Under the Affordable Care Act, there's something called medical cost sharing. It used to be a Christian ministry. That's another way to put it. Mm-hmm. And it started off as small Christian organizations that would cover their own members of the church, and they would share their own medical expenses. That's actually written into the letter of the law, and it's become a nationwide movement. There are different companies. I belong to one called Liberty Health Share. There's MediShare, there's Samaritan, and they've been around for a good 10, 15 years, and they've been doing this on a small level. But since the Affordable Care Act, they've expanded. So I can use myself as an example. I'm paying $199 a month, which is the most expensive version of the plan. I have a $500 out-of-pocket per year, and I'm covered up to $1 million per occurrence per year for any medically necessary incident that happens to me. So if I need surgery, if I need to go to the doctor, if I need an x-ray, a scan, blood work, etc., my only out-of-pocket is going to be $500 for the entire year. That trumps anything that the insurance industry can offer. And I'm covered. I'm following the mandates of the Affordable Care Act because it's written into it. So I don't get fined. I don't have to worry about the government coming down on me, but I'm actually, I've carved out a way to play the game in a way that is appropriate for me and it's affordable. I can go to any doctor I want, any hospital I want, and it's a movement. As soon as people find out about this, and they just, they can't believe that it actually exists, and why didn't they know about it sooner? And the Liberty Health Share has a more libertarian model to it. So you don't have to belong to a specific church. You don't have to be Christian. But you do have to follow the tenets of Christian ministries, which means you're going to, you know, bear the responsibility for taking care of your neighbor. They don't allow abortion, and there's no euthanasia, which is fair. Mm-hmm. If you want those things, then you should pay for them. But if you want to have the peace of mind of being, if something catastrophic happens to you, you're not going to go bankrupt. Government's not going to be able to step in and know what's going on with you and your doctor. You get to make your own decisions. That is the future of healthcare. And I honestly don't believe this is an answer that's going to be legislated. I don't trust the government to do it. They're not going to. It would have already been done. Repeal and replace is gone. If you really understand, and I'm going to tell you why I'm saying that, the whole system is broken already. They've created chaos. We've had community hospitals close. We've had hospital systems spring up. And in Atlanta, where I live, there's only 3 hospital systems left. There used to be dozens of hospitals. So you're going to the most expensive parts of the healthcare system, to a hospital for delivery. If I told you that you can use Liberty Healthcare or pay out of pocket, and pay a tenth, a fraction of what you pay in a hospital, no one will believe that. But we're talking about administrative charges and state charges, and it's all trumped up. And they're charging whatever they can get away with, and they are getting away with it. But if you go to that same hospital and you tell them, I'm going to pay you cash, I'm going to make you a deal, let's come to some agreement, they're happy to do that. But you have to know the power that you have as a patient, as a consumer. And that's what the book goes into. Medical cost sharing is one version of it. You can also pay out of pocket. There is something called the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, which gives their prices online. And you can know exactly from the time you walk in there to the time you're discharged how much it's going to cost you. And it's a fraction of what you're going to pay in the hospital. There's medical tourism, which people don't really talk about very much. But there's a company called patientpartnersadvocate.com that you can go and look up medical tourism for whatever process and whatever surgery you need to have done. It's reputable, and it's fraction again of what you're costing here. And it's all about being knowledgeable about the choices that you have. You don't have to be stuck in the system. You don't have to have your privacy stripped away. You don't have to have your medical consent stripped away, which is happening now when they're forcing people to take medications and vaccines. That's going to get worse, I think. Hmm. It's all about taking your power back. And if you stop playing this game, withdraw your consent, the system actually does change. They do understand money.
Again, the book is Big Medicine by Dr. Yelena George. Now, one of the ways I know that people can support your work, obviously, is by buying this book, Big Medicine. And I think this book will benefit them to have this information in their hands. But how can, is there other ways that people can support your work? And also, where can you be found online?
I have a website, drelenageorge.com, D-R-E-L-A-I-N-A, George like the man's name.com. I've been writing a blog for about 7 years now, and unfortunately, I kind of saw this coming, so it gives you a synopsis in a very short way of getting on board and understanding where we're going, where we've come from. I also have a radio show called Medicine on Call. It runs live at from 9 to 10 Eastern Time, Wednesdays. It's on iTunes as a podcast, and it also is syndicated on Liberty Talk FM on the weekends at noon.
Excellent. Again, the website is Dr. Yelena George, drelenageorge.com. And the book is Big Medicine, and you can find out all the information at drelenageorge.com. And Dr. George, this has been a real pleasure, and it's been very eye-opening. I would love to have you back sometime.
I would love to come back. Great. I just want people to know that we have so much power that we're just giving away.
Yeah.
And once we take it back, we don't have to depend on anybody to help us. We can help ourselves.
And joining me right now is Red Smedley, a bartender who claims that he saw reptilians in his bar that shifted to humans when he noticed them. Red Smedley, welcome to the Bruce Collins Show.
Thank you for having me, Bruce.
Well, it's great to have you on. Now, tell us first about your bar. Where is it located?
We're located at the corner of Smith and Weston. It's in Pantherburn, Mississippi. Little bar called Drinks on You.
So how did you become a bartender, Red?
Friends said I made good drinks, so I became a bartender.
Interesting. Now, was it always a career goal for you to be a bartender?
No, my first dream was to become an astronaut, but they said I had to quit drinking.
Huh. Is Red your real name?
No, Red is my nickname.
Oh, how did you get your nickname?
I made it up.
Huh. Okay, so why did you pick the name Red?
It rhymed with my last name, Smedley.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what's your real first name, Red?
My first name is Fred.
First name is Fred. Well, then why would you need to have a nickname that... Oh, never mind. So let's get to your story. You saw some reptilians at your bar. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it was a crowded Tuesday night. We always have chicken wings and nachos free for happy hour. Please tell your friends about our Tuesday night specials, and you can find us on them internets. We are working on an online coupon, and we have lots of fun activities planned throughout the week. Group discounts are available.
That's great, but Red, can you get to the reptilians?
Yes, well, the bar is located, like I said, at the corner of Smith and Weston, and we have ample parking for all your listeners. Just make sure you tell the bouncer old Red sent you.
Red, please tell us about the reptilians.
Oh, yes, the reptilians. They love the import beers and the add drinks on you. We have a ton of imported drinks for you to choose from. Come early, because the parking lot fills up quickly.
And what time did the reptilians arrive, Red?
Happy hour starts at 6, so after a long day at work, why don't you come on down to Drinks on You and have a great time with the whole gang? Try our new foosball table and hockey games.
Red, did the reptilians do anything while they were at your bar?
Everybody likes our small arcade and large screen TVs. On Fridays, we have boxing on our great giant plasma. You can even order food from our newly expanded grill. Make sure you invite Mom and Dad and the whole family.
Red?
Yes?
You know, I'm beginning to think that this is just a big advertisement for you. And to be brutally honest, I'm really disappointed. Now, did you have reptilians or not?
Reptilians? Well, yes, we did. They came in with their Donald Trump signs, ranting, hooping, and hollering.
Donald Trump? Are you talking about Republicans?
Yes, yes, that's it. And some of them ordered from the menu.
Well, Red, why did you say reptilians if you meant Republicans?
I have trouble pronouncing some of my words.
Okay, I'm at a loss now.
Oh, do you have trouble pronouncing some of your words, too?
What a waste of time.
I agree. And if you would like to waste some more time, come on down to Drinks on You at the corner of Smith and Wesson. Tell them an old Red Smedley sent you.
And folks, with that, all I can do is apologize.
How much of a geek are you? No, seriously, do you think you're a Star Wars expert? Well, take the hardest Star Wars quiz in the world and find out. Go to zippycheese.com and see how well you know the Star Wars movies. There's a quiz for the original trilogy, or, if you dare, take the quiz for the prequel trilogy. What's the name of the creature in the trash compactor in Episode 4? What was the name of the curator of the Jedi Archives in Episode 2? Go to zippycheese.com, take the quiz, and share with your friends. There's also a Marvel comic book quiz. Do you know obscure Marvel comic book characters? We'll find out today. That's zippycheese.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bruce Collins on location in the caves of Kilimanjaro.
And so far, I see no signs of Bigfoot, only my little feet.
The new Theater of the Mind, with the Baron of Broadcasting.
The Bruce Collins Memoirs, Chapter 4. The Post-Secondary Education Years. I once knew a cross-eyed professor who couldn't keep his pupils straight.
The Clown Prince of Doom, Bruce Collins.
Warning, warning. Bruce Collins Show. Don't try this at home.
All right, folks, that's right. It's Brett Big Swag Wagner, the host of Speed Channel's Pastime. And listen, when I need advice on life or anything else that's out there that's bothering me, I listen to the Bruce Collins Show. Why aren't you?
Once upon a time, there lived a young boy named Bruce. What happened to that young boy? He became a major headache.
Theater of the Mind.
Thank you once again for joining us here on the Bruce Collins Show, where we broadcast every Thursday night at 10 p.m. right here at WWPR 1490 a.m. Remember, God loves you. We do too. Don't give up.